Chip and Charge,
der Tennis-Podcast mit Andreas Thies
und Philipp Joubert auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Die US Open sind vorbei. Es ist wieder Zeit, sich mal wieder um das in Anführungsstrichen richtige Tennis zu kümmern, das Challenger-Tennis. Herzlich willkommen zur neuen Ausgabe der Challenger Corner powered by Chip and Charge. Mein Name ist Andreas Thies, wieder mit dabei Florian Heer, der Macher von TennisTourTalk.com. Hallo Florian.
Hola Andreas.
Hast du und wie viel hast du von den US Open gesehen?
Ganz ehrlich, bis zur finalen Phase tatsächlich nicht sehr viel.
Du hast dich mal wieder rumgetrieben, ne?
Ja, wenn du das so nennen magst, ja. Ich war in Spanien unterwegs bei diversen Turnieren, genau.
Ja, und über die wollen wir heute sprechen. Spanien war während der US Open ein Ort, wo viele, viele Turniere stattgefunden haben. Wir wollen zwei Turniere uns im Speziellen angucken. Einerseits das ATP Challenger in Sevilla und auf der anderen Seite dann das ITF-Turnier, das 25.000er Turnier in Oviedo. Da haben wir jetzt ein paar Interviewpartner und wir können sagen, fast überall nur Veteranen im Interview heute.
Ist das so? Ja, tatsächlich. Die Auswahl, die ich quasi mitgebracht hat, ist so. Die Routiniers, oder sagt man auf Deutsch? Die sind mit
ja,
dabei
die Routiniers.
Diesmal.
Ja.
Ja, diesmal haben wir die Routiniers mit dabei. Na, ist ja auch in Ordnung, denn wir haben ja auf ITF und ATP Challenger-Ebene ja nicht nur die neuen Stars, die kommen, die haben wir ja immer in unserer Rubrik, You Heard Him Here First, aber es gibt natürlich auch einige von den Routiniers, die ja entweder den Weg wieder zurücksuchen auf die große Tour oder eben ja sich tatsächlich zum Ende der Karriere dann auch noch das ein oder andere Preisgeld und ATP-Weltranglistenpunkte dort auch noch erreichen möchten.
Wir gehen zur Copa Sevilla und diese hatte sich in den letzten Jahren dadurch ausgezeichnet, dass sie auf gelbem Sand durchgeführt worden ist. Warum hat man sich des gelben Sandes in Sevilla entledigt?
Ja, dieser Albedo, das ist jetzt 2 Jahre her. Ich war tatsächlich vor 2 Jahren das letzte Mal dort. Das war die letzte Ausgabe, wo auf diesem Albedo-Sand, wie die Spanier das nennen, dort ausgetragen wird. Also dieser traditionelle Sand, der unter anderem auch in diesen Stierkampfarenen verwendet wird und vor allem in Andalusien sehr gängig ist, tatsächlich in vielen Tennisclubs. Aber es gab über viele Jahre und ja, man kann vielleicht schon sagen, seit Jahrzehnten dann auch immer wieder. Ja, Beschwerden ist vielleicht ein bisschen viel, aber es gab immer wieder den Hinweis der Spieler, dass man sich auch immer wieder dran gewöhnen muss, wenn der gelbe Ball dann eben auf diesen gelben Sand trifft. Und auch dann später das Fernsehen vor allem hat dann natürlich auch noch ihren Beitrag oder seinen Beitrag dazu geleistet, weil sie gesagt haben, na also für die Fernsehübertragung ist das also komplett ungeeignet, weil man das eben überhaupt nicht sieht. Ne? Du bist ein alter Tischtennisspieler, du kennst es. Du hast auch wahrscheinlich noch mit den grünen Platten angefangen, die irgendwann mal dann, glaube ich, auf blau gewechselt sind. Ne?
Und ich glaube, ja, so es gibt auch heute noch grüne Platten und weiße Bälle. Es gibt allerdings auch blaue Platten und gelbe Bälle und mit den gelben Bällen kam ich früher gar nicht klar beim Tischtennis.
Nee. Ja, die
was lag, also das habe ich auf meine Farbenblindheit zurückgeführt.
Komischerweise habe ich mit denen nie gespielt, also zumindest nicht in irgendwelchen Wettkämpfen. Ich wusste gar nicht, ob das überhaupt erlaubt ist, ob man mit gelben spielt. Mhm. Doch, darf man, glaube ich, ja.
Auf den blauen Platten.
Na, okay. Ja, aber ich habe das eigentlich nur mitbekommen, dass es irgendwann mal diese blauen Platten eingeführt wurden. Und ich glaube, das hat auch Fernseh- und TV-Gründe gehabt.
Mhm. Genau. Und das ist also auch in Sevilla der Plan gewesen. Und in Sevilla hatte man eigentlich ein relativ prominentes Feld dann zusammengebracht. Roberto Caballes Baena war an 1 gesetzt, Carlos Tabernier an 2. Wir haben eben darüber gesprochen, dass sehr, sehr viele Veteranen dabei waren. Unter anderem waren dann auch Dusan Lajovic und Pablo Carreño Busta mit dabei. Und die beiden, die hattest du im Interview hier bei diesem Turnier in Sevilla. Dusan Lajovic ist auch nach längerer Verletzung wieder zurückgekommen. Er war ja Top-50-Spieler und war eigentlich ein absoluter Fixpunkt dann auch im serbischen Tennis beziehungsweise dann auch im Welttennis, weil er auch die Großen ärgern konnte. Das kann er im Moment nicht, aber er hat hier das Halbfinale erreicht. Und Dusan Lajovic war im Interview zu Gast bei Florian Heer und erzählt darüber, was in den letzten Monaten passiert ist und was in Zukunft vielleicht passieren wird. Hier ist das Interview mit Dusan Lajovic.
So Dusan, first of all, thanks for your time. Yeah, it was a good win today. What was the key to success in this match?
Yeah, I think I controlled the match pretty good from the beginning till the end. I served really well in the important moments. There were a lot of games where it was 30 all break points and similar pressure situations like that. So I feel like my serve was working today pretty well. Also, I was pretty solid from the baseline, and I think that I was able to step up when it mattered, especially in terms of bringing the intensity. I felt like when I'm able to play a little bit faster, he was feeling it and he was running a little bit more. So that was probably the biggest difference today.
Conditions here in Sevilla, anything that suits your game?
I mean, it's a little bit too slow for me. Mm-hmm. I would say I prefer when the ball is faster on play, especially in the conditions like this where I can even use my kick a little bit more. But, you know, already played two matches, got used to conditions. So now it's really doesn't really matter anymore. I feel like for me, the most important is first rounds to get into the rhythm. And then after that, I feel like I'm pretty well accustomed to the conditions, and now, you know, now the tournament starts, the tournament opens now, quarterfinals, semifinals, finals is where you make the difference, at least in this kind of tournaments.
How's the current situation with you? Are you still based in Spain, or how does it work?
Well, yeah, I mean, my residence is in Serbia, but I'm practicing in Spain when I have time, which is not a lot during the year. It's maybe 3-4 weeks during the year, plus the preseason, so when I have time, I go to Spain to train, but with the current calendar and the way the tour is organized now, there's really, really not a lot of time. Mm.
So this is in Barcelona?
Yeah, next to Barcelona, mm-hmm. Castel de Fels. Yeah, yeah. It's 10 minutes from Barcelona, from the city.
And you have been working with José Pelas for a long time, which is, well, let me say, pretty unusual nowadays. Can you tell us a bit about your relationship?
Well, yeah, I think this is our 9th year together, and I feel like I was always the supporter of having your team for a longer period of time, because it's a process, and obviously some things cannot work right away. You need time to understand what the coaches want from you, to be able to use that on the court, and this takes time. I think that the players today, not all, but I see a lot with young players, they are changing coaches a lot, which sometimes is not really good, because even if the coach is good, like 3 to 6 months is not enough time for him to apply what he wants in your game. And I feel like if you can see the top players, they're all sticking to their teams for a longer period of time, because it's working, and I'm a big supporter of that.
You have been on the tour for many, many years. How would you see the differences maybe when you started on the Challenger Tour compared to nowadays?
It's definitely better level on the Challengers now. Mm-hmm. I feel that it improved. I'm comparing it to 12, 13 years ago when I was playing Challengers.
Yeah.
I feel that all the players are pretty much more similar now. They can really play good level. The only thing is I feel like missing a little bit consistency from the top 100 players compared mm-hmm. to the Challenger players. But, you know, in the past, I felt like you could maybe play a round or two and really feel like, you know, there is a big difference in level. But you don't have that anymore today. I feel like you can lose against anybody in the Challenger, and you can beat also anybody. But I don't know 80% of these guys, but when I see them train, when I see them play, it looks like the level is there. It looks like they have a good quality. So I think that I would say now until 250, 300, the level is very, very similar.
Okay. When I read your profile on the ATP, I read that, or it is stated that you started tennis by coincidence. Was it because you were playing other sports as well, or how did it start?
Well, yeah, I mean, in the city where I lived, you really didn't have a lot of choices. I wanted to play football like every other kid in Serbia at that time. But I was 7-8 years old, and they didn't have, for that age group, they didn't have any not availability, but they just didn't have any lessons for that age group. And I was one day hanging out in the tennis club because they had a pizzeria, and then I tried to go on court, and that's how I started. So it was really by accident, but since I started, I didn't stop. Here we are 30 years later.
It was a good choice, obviously.
Yeah.
Was it also maybe affected by the war still in Yugoslavia? Or did it affect you in any way?
Well, I mean, not really, because at the time I was still young. I was 4 or 5 and then 9 for the second war. So I was still just in the country being a kid. So for tennis, it didn't really affect me more. It was more affecting the players who were a little bit older than me. But in my individual case, it was not an issue because I was still just starting back then. Mm.
And it was also stated that your idol was Pete Sampras. When you have a look at the players nowadays at the top of the rankings, anyone you really like to watch?
Well, yeah, I mean, I would say from the new generation, I like to watch Carlos the most because I feel like he's the most attractive player on the court with his game style. When I was growing up, obviously, Sampras was my idol. I was even playing like him, even though I couldn't beat anybody with serve and volley. And I feel like it's nice to see how the tennis developed over the course of 30 years.
And you're still one of the players, which is also pretty rare nowadays, is your one-handed backhand. What are the advantages of a single-handed backhand?
I would say it's more disadvantages in today's tennis of a single backhand. Obviously, with the technology of the rackets and the balls being bigger and bigger and a little bit slower, I feel like the players with one-handed backhand are struggling a little bit. Mm-hmm. And if I was to teach kids now, I would definitely tell them to start two-handed backhand. Okay. Because I just feel it gives you more chances to succeed. It's a bigger opportunity, and tennis change, obviously. One-handed, I feel like it's more for, you know, feel and timing, and in today's tennis there is a lot more power, and you need to be much more powerful, and I feel that's why the situation is like this currently.
Michael Stick told me once that you have to run less with a single-handed backhand.
I don't know. Today, I think you have to run regardless.
Okay. When you rate your season so far, what would you say? You won a title this year. How would you rate it so far?
I would say this season was pretty tough. Probably one of my worst seasons on the tour. Obviously, I had issues with two injuries since last September, twisted ankle in Davis Cup last year. Mm-hmm. So my ending of the season last year was non-existing. And this was bothering me throughout the beginning of this season as well. Then in Wimbledon, I hurt my knee, which is still a little bit bothering me. But on top of that, I'm close to come back to top 100, which I think is the goal now in the next few weeks. And if I'm able to do that, I think it's going to be a success of the season, regardless of all the other results.
When you look back at the highlights of your career, the title win in Banja Luka, maybe the most outstanding?
Well, definitely. The title in Banja Luka, I would say. Finals in Monte Carlo. Mm-hmm. Also title in Umag, because there are only two of those. And I would say ATP Cup as well.
Okay. Also, these are these experiences the most you won't forget, right? I think because also I was in Banja Luka for a challenger a couple of years ago, and I remember the atmosphere. It was incredible. I think it's anything that for a player, a Serbian player, which is really the most exciting one?
Definitely, because I felt people in Banja Luka really loved the tennis tournament there, and when they had the ATP there, I think they enjoyed, and every day the stands were full, so it was really a pleasure to play there. Also, ATP Cup in Australia was like you're playing in the home country, because there's so many Serbian living there, and everybody was coming to support us and watch, so that was also like playing at the home event, so I really enjoyed that one as well.
And maybe just one question about your nickname. How come? Dutsi is on social media everywhere. How come this name?
Well, honestly, I have no idea. When I was a kid, everybody was calling me like that, and other people who were named Dusan as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it's not a standard nickname. Like,
it isn't.
It's really rare even for my name in Serbia. So I honestly have no idea from where that came from.
And you like it?
I like it, yeah.
Okay, you already mentioned the goals to break into the top 100 again. Do you also have any plans maybe after your career already, or is it anything? No, there are no thoughts about it right now.
No, I mean, I have a lot of things and interests after career, but I'm not putting too much energy into it, because I feel like now it's important to put all my focus and energy into keeping my career going and having good last couple of years in tennis. So I do have a lot of plans, but that will come later.
Okay, perfect. Thanks a lot.
Ja, ist ein bisschen zurückgefallen, ne? In der Weltrangliste.
Ja, du hast gesagt, Top 50 Spieler, habe ich gerade mal geschaut, ich glaube, er war 23 sogar der Welt, also war schon da unter den Top 25 sogar, aktuell dann jetzt unter den 130 da mit dabei. Ja, natürlich, der hat seine Blütezeit dann so gehabt in den 2019er, 2020er Saison, glaube ich, da lief es richtig gut, er hat Titel da eben gewonnen, ATP-Tour-Titel in Umag, später nochmal in Banja Luka, wo ich dann auch nochmal im Interview drauf angesprochen habe, war aber natürlich auch einer, der immer wieder Challenger-Turniere gespielt hat, ne? Also hat dort ja inzwischen 8 Turniersiege auch feiern können und was ich so faszinierend finde ist, 35 ist er inzwischen, dass er natürlich dann eben auch nochmal auf dieser Challenger-Tour da aktiv unterwegs ist und man merkt halt, dass er dann auch noch vom Naturtalent aus, sage ich mal, immer noch die Möglichkeit hat, dann mit diesen Jungs auf jeden Fall mitzuhalten, auch wenn er vielleicht aus einer Verletzung dann auch gekommen ist. Und vor allem auch eben die Zusammenarbeit mit José Perlas, die eben doch schon sehr, sehr lange ist und wie auch im Interview erwähnt, ich doch relativ ungewöhnlich finde oder ich kenne nicht so viele Beispiele im Spitzentennis, wo man eben so lange Partnerschaften hat. Es ist alles kurzlebiger geworden und da ist es dann doch immer wieder eine Besonderheit, dass die beiden da doch sehr, sehr lange auch eben zusammenarbeiten und insgesamt auch sehr erfolgreich zusammenarbeiten.
Unter den 130 ist er jetzt, du hast es gesagt, er hat das Halbfinale hier erreicht. Eine Geschichte möchte ich nochmal gerade erzählen. Als ich das allererste Mal bei einem Grand Slam war, das war 2018 bei den French Open, ich bin noch kein Veteran dabei, was die Grand Slams angeht, da habe ich in einem der allerletzten Matches in der Stierkampf-Arena damals in Roland-Garros Dusan Lajovic gegen Alexander Zverev gesehen und das war ein 5-Satz-Match und das hat Zverev in 5 Sätzen gewonnen. Das war vielleicht auch so ein ganz kleines bisschen die Tragik von Dusan Lajovic, die ganz großen Matches hat er immer verloren. Er hat zwar immer mal wieder für eine Überraschung sorgen können, aber so ganz große Matches, da war er ja vielleicht dann auch immer so ein kleines bisschen der Unterlegene.
Ja, mag sein, kann mich jetzt an die Partie tatsächlich nicht mehr erinnern, aber was für ihn, glaube ich, wichtig ist, stehen eben diese 2 ATP-Turniersiege. Die stehen auf jeden Fall in seinem Steckbrief und das ist, denke ich mal, auch ganz wichtig, dass er da nicht immer als ewiger Runner-up dann auf der ATP-Tour da vielleicht auch da in die Geschichte eingeht. Und so gesehen, das kann ihm keiner nehmen. Ich glaube, der wirkliche Karrierehoch für ihn, der ist vorbei. Weiß nicht, ob er da auch hundertprozentig da noch fit ist, um da wirklich auch nochmal zu seinen 100% zurückzukommen. Aber wie gesagt, für Challenger-Ebene reicht es noch, weil ich denke, dass er von der Natur her einfach ein sehr talentierter Spieler ist, ne? Der ein super Ballgefühl hat, der einfach auch sehr klug auf dem Court agiert, sehr gut seine Spieler und den Spielstil seines Gegenübers dann auch sehr gut antizipieren kann und dementsprechend dann auch darauf reagieren kann, ihn dann auch mit vielleicht weniger Aufwand dann auch zum Laufen zu bringen. Und das ist auch etwas, was er in Sibiu wieder sehr gut unter Beweis stellen konnte. Und das ist dann wahrscheinlich, das reicht bis zu einem gewissen Grad. Das ist, glaube ich, das, was du auch so meinst. Aber es reicht dann vielleicht eben nicht für die Top 10 oder hat auch eben dann vielleicht nicht damals auch für die Top 10 gereicht. Aber wie gesagt, ich glaube, es kann insgesamt mit dieser Karriere und mit seiner Karriere sehr, sehr zufrieden sein. Und ein paar Jährchen auf der Tour wird er vielleicht auch noch verbringen.
Gerade in diesem Moment, wo wir aufnehmen, spielt Stan Wawrinka auch noch mit 40. Also von daher kann es noch ein paar Jahre gehen für Dusan Lajovic. Sein Gegner im Viertelfinale, das war Pablo Carreño Busta und den hat er mit 6-4, 3-6, 6-3 besiegt. Und auch Carreño Busta hat eine durchaus lebhafte Karriere hinter sich. 7 Titel insgesamt, er hat schon mal Top 10 gespielt und hat nach einer Ellbogenverletzung nie wieder so zu der alten Form gefunden. Und Carreño Busta hat hier mitgespielt und auch den hört ihr im Interview. Pablo Carreño hier im Interview mit Florian hier.
First of all, congratulations. Thank you. Good win against an in-form player. What made the difference in the end of this match today?
Well, so that the opening is with a lot of confidence coming from Menorca winning the tournament, but also coming from hardcourt. Like me, like the Open, but he has just a few days to try to play on clay. But I mean, I think that at the beginning I play really focused on do my game, be aggressive, and was very important. Not the beginning. After that, he tries to do his best also. He plays better and better, but I mean, I think that I control the match more or less during all the match. Maybe a few moments I viewed a little bit, but it was good. I'm happy.
You already mentioned you were back in North America, played a couple of tournaments, you know very well. How was the experience being back there?
Yeah, of course. It wasn't the best American tour that I made, losing on first round of quali in Cincinnati, then second round of US Open. But I think that I was playing better and better every week. And now I think that I'm playing much better than at the beginning of the in Toronto, for example, or Cincinnati. And it's important, no, to me to get the rhythm, play as much matches as I can. And it's a big opportunity here to play at home and try to win a lot of matches here and, win some points.
How would you rate your performance? How close are you to your best?
Well, so far, my best was very, very, very good level, not just the level, also the physically and mentally I was 100% during a lot of years. After the injury on my elbow, it's tough to come back at the same level, but it's true that now I'm trying to do it. I'm a little bit frustrated in some matches because I didn't give my best level, but I need to know that I'm 34 years old already, so maybe it's gonna be difficult not to be as much as my best level, but we try until the end.
But the idea is to get back to...
Well, of course, it's always the idea to be at 100% again, but it's important not to start winning these kind of matches and get the confidence.
And you had a good start into the year, playing, winning back-to-back titles in Tenerife.
Yeah, of course, but it's not the same level playing challengers that play in the ATP level, but it's important also winning in this kind of tournaments.
Finally, you played Sevilla before two times. You always reached the final at least.
Yes.
What are your memories of the tournaments? I think it was 10 years ago.
A lot of time ago. It's a really different Pablo Carreño, but I have really good memories about playing here in Sevilla. The crowd is amazing here. The weather playing at this time at 7 more or less is fantastic. I try to do it again, no, to be in the final. It's going to be difficult for sure, but why not?
And it's not only the difference in terms of you, the surface has changed. How do you what is the difference of the
Albero that was the surface before was a little bit faster and different, but playing now on the normal clay court is easy for everybody to be fine here. So it's something different, but normally we play on this surface, so it's fantastic.
Perfect.
Thanks a lot.
Thank you.
2000, Ende 2023, Anfang 2024 hatte ich, glaube ich, eine Ellbogen-OP und seitdem hakt es wieder so ein bisschen. Dann, also mit 33, 34 zurückzukommen, das stelle ich mir auch ganz, ganz schwierig vor.
Ja, das ist, glaube ich, auch, also je älter du wirst, desto schwieriger werden auch diese Comebacks. Also ich meine, ich spüre das ja auch, je älter ich werde, desto schwerer wird es für mich dann auch jeden Tag, wenn man dann, dass die Wehwehchen dann manchmal noch auch immer mehr werden. Also dementsprechend, glaube ich, kann man das sehr gut nachvollziehen, dass das dann natürlich auf jeden Fall das Ganze nicht vereinfacht. Für Carreño Busta oder für mich war es eine ganz besondere Zusammenkunft mit Carreño Busta, weil das natürlich einer der Spieler ist, die ich wirklich vom Karrierebeginn eigentlich immer verfolgt habe. Also ich habe ihn verfolgt von ITF-Ebene bis viele seiner Challenger-Erfolge dort eben auch miterlebt und war zu der Zeit dann auch, als er noch auf der Challenger-Tour dann eben war, bevor er auf die ATP-Tour dann eigentlich wirklich kam, sehr häufig mit ihm auf den gleichen Turnieren unterwegs und das war dann natürlich schon ganz interessant. Ich kann mich noch sehr gut daran erinnern, dass er ein Turnier in Cordenons gewonnen hat. Ich glaube, es war wahrscheinlich sein 10. Challenger-Erfolg oder so und danach ging es nach Nordamerika zum ersten Mal, glaube ich, für ihn, hat dort Hardcore Swing gespielt und es war so die Frage, naja, also funktioniert das dann, kann er überhaupt auf Hartblatt spielen, weil er halt bisher doch hauptsächlich auf Sand unterwegs war und das hat er ja dann sehr eindrucksvoll bewiesen, dann vor allem ja. auch in den nächsten Jahren. Winston-Salem gewonnen, hat dann auch in Asien Turniere gewonnen und dann natürlich vor allem auch das ATP Masters 2022, glaube ich, in Kanada dann auch gewonnen gehabt. Also er hat ja dann auch wirklich eine tolle Karriere gehabt, hat Halbfinale US Open gespielt, nicht zu vergessen. Ja, also da war einiges mit dabei und hat ja auch nach der Verletzung hat ein neues Trainerteam aufgebaut und darf nichts vergessen, sein alter Coach Samuel Lopez, der ist ja jetzt dann ja auch Teil von dem Team von Carlos Alcaraz, weil Carreño Busta ja lange an der Ferrero Akademie auch war. Und da war Samuel Lopez eigentlich sein Hauptcoach und der hat sich ja inzwischen dann an dem Camp um Juan Carlos Ferrero und Carlos Alcaraz angeschlossen und hat jetzt also in Barcelona quasi nochmal auch ein neues Team aufgebaut. Auch die waren, wir haben vorher über Lajovic und José Perlas gesprochen, also auch Lopez und Carreño Busta waren sehr, sehr lange zusammen. Und das war auch natürlich eine Sache, Umstellung, was neu dann in seinem Umfeld dann auch gewesen ist und hat dieses Jahr eigentlich ganz gut begonnen, hat die beiden Tenerife Challenger auch auf Hartplatz gewonnen gehabt und ja, auch dort ist natürlich die Frage, er wird nicht mehr zu seinen Bestform wahrscheinlich finden, aber auf Challenger-Ebene gehört er immer natürlich noch zu den Größen und ich denke auch, dass natürlich auf den ATP-Turnieren er da auch noch immer wieder eine Rolle spielen wird. Weiß gar nicht, US Open, zweite Runde, erste Runde? Ja, also auf jeden Fall da ja auch.
Ich gucke es mal gerade nach. Ich habe zweite Runde hat er gegen Ben Shelton verloren.
Ja, genau, gegen Ben Shelton und gut, gegen den kann man ja mal verlieren. Also dementsprechend ist das ja dann auch immer wieder, ist das ja etwas, da wo er, sage ich mal, in so einem Ranking damit drin ist, wo er auf jeden Fall in die Main Draws der Grand Slams reinkommt. Und solange das der Fall ist, dann ist das, glaube ich, auch etwas, wo man da noch sehr zufrieden ist und auch zufrieden sein kann. Auch dort wird wahrscheinlich nicht mehr in die Top 10 zurückkehren, aber auch er hat eine tolle Karriere da eben gehabt und wie gesagt, für mich war das so ein bisschen eine Besonderheit, ihn auf einem Challenger-Turnier gleich zum ersten Mal wahrscheinlich seit 10 Jahren wieder getroffen zu haben und das war natürlich schon ein bisschen speziell.
Und er hat die Bronzemedaille bei Olympia 2021 erreicht, genau, das richtig, müssen wir auch noch weiter. Ja. Sieger dieses Turniers wurden aber weder Dusan Lajovic noch Pablo Carreño Busta. Sieger dieses Turniers wurde der Peruaner Ignacio Buse. Der hat das Finale im 3 Sätzen gewonnen gegen Gennaro Oliveri. Der hatte in der ersten Runde nämlich Roberto Caballes Baena besiegt. Ignacio Buse war hinterher im Siegerinterview und er war sehr, sehr glücklich. Das Interview, das hört ihr hier.
Ignacio, congratulations. What a final, what a battle. Can you tell us a bit about this championship match here in Sevilla?
Oh, it's amazing. I'm just so happy. I can't describe in words what just happened today. As I said before, all the sacrifices, all the hard days of training, I think those days are the ones that sum up to suffer and accomplish these matches. So I'm really happy and I want to enjoy now this tournament and yeah, next week I go back to competition. So yeah, I enjoy, but not too much because next week I have competition again.
And it was a pretty tough one. You also had some injury. How do you feel physically right now?
No, I feel good. I was scared because in the 4-3, well, I don't feel like 100%, but yeah, the physio told me that I was good. So that's a good thing. And yeah, well, now I want to recover, but I will be 100% for sure.
Last time you last challenged the title in Germany, chilly conditions now here in the heat of Andalusia. What do you prefer?
Well, I think both. I think it's special in any place, but the important thing I think is to adapt to the conditions, and I think I adapted really good.
And finally, you already said it, there will be time for some celebrations tonight?
Yeah, for sure. I want to celebrate it with my team because I think life is about that also. Train, work, and when good things happen, also celebrate, no?
Perfect. Wish you all the best. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Die 32.000-Euro-Frage für uns, vielleicht die 8.000-Euro-Frage, nenne 2 weitere peruanische ehemalige ATP-Spieler.
Ja, auf jeden Fall Jaime Isaga.
Auf jeden Fall.
Und ja, jetzt wird es schon schwierig. Ich weiß es, da gibt es noch ein paar. Jetzt stehe ich wieder auf dem Schlauch. Jetzt musst du mir wieder aufhelfen.
Luis Horner,
danke schön, ja. Genau. Genau. Ja, und wir müssen vor allem auch noch korrigieren, denn wir haben anfangs gesagt, wir haben nur Routiniers. Das gilt natürlich für Ignacio Buse überhaupt nicht. Ne? Also das ist tatsächlich einer der, wir hatten ihn schon im Interview, er hat den Bad Rappenau Neckar Cup gewonnen dieses Jahr, seinen ersten Challenger-Erfolg gefeiert und er ist on fire. Ne? Auch einen, den wir jetzt übrigens schon relativ lange oder ich schon relativ lange jetzt verfolge, mehr oder weniger zufällig in dem Fall. Ich glaube vor 2 Jahren oder im vergangenen Jahr war es sogar erst, dann zum ersten Mal auch auf ITF-Ebene gesehen gehabt und sehr spannend, seine Karriere zu verfolgen, weil das natürlich jetzt sein größter Triumph überhaupt war, 125er Turnier bei der Copa Sevilla zu gewinnen. Man muss dazu sagen, das Turnier ist auch ohne gelben Sand immer noch wahnsinnig toll besucht. Das wird abends gespielt unter Flutlicht und der Center Court gerade zu dem Finalwochenende, der ist wirklich ratzevoll auf den letzten Platz. Da muss man dann teilweise irgendwo am Boden sitzen, um da überhaupt noch einen Platz zu bekommen. Und das ist schon wirklich ganz, ganz besonders. Und dann so ein Finale zu spielen, in dem Fall gegen Olivieri, wo er eigentlich unter Kontrolle hatte, ist dann im zweiten Satz, glaube ich, dann auf dem Weg zum Netz irgendwo gestürzt und ist dann, ja, war ein bisschen angeschlagen, musste sich auch behandeln lassen und das hat ihn so ein bisschen, glaube ich, aus dem Rhythmus gebracht, hat auch im Interview gesagt, er stand so ein wenig unter Schock oder wusste nicht genau, was war. Der Physio hat gesagt, er ist okay, deshalb hat er auch weitergemacht und hat dann aber ein bisschen Zeit gebraucht, da wieder in das Match zurückzufinden, was ihm dann am Ende auch gelungen ist und der dann also in 3 Sätzen gewinnen konnte. Wäre vielleicht auch noch ein bisschen schneller gegangen, aber ist ein sehr interessanter Spieler, weil er einfach wirklich richtig gut in Form ist und ich bin sehr gespannt, wie das in Zukunft aussieht. Auch einer, wo wir dann so ein bisschen Parallele zu Cardenio Busta sehen werden und vor allem dann auch beobachten müssen, wie er sich auf den anderen Untergründen dann da beweist. Ne? Bisher auf Sand läuft es natürlich sehr gut.
Luis Horner, bekannt geworden damals, der Peruaner, übrigens durch einen Sieg gegen Roger Federer bei den French Open, als Roger Federer noch am Anfang quasi seiner Karriere stand.
Er blutet, er taumelt und steht doch wieder auf. Bastian Schweinsteiger im WM-Finale 2014 in Rio. Gezeichnet, aber unerschütterlich. Diese Bilder machten ihn zur Legende. Doch der Weg dahin, der war lang. Vom frechen Lausbub mit wilden Frisuren und Eskapaden über bittere Niederlagen, wie zum Beispiel das Finale daheim, bis hin zum Anführer, der Bayern zum Triple-Sieger machte und Deutschland zum Weltmeister. Die ganze Geschichte von Bastian Schweinsteiger, der blutige Weg zur Legende, hört ihr jetzt in den 100 Fußballlegenden, überall wo es Podcasts gibt.
Das war das Turnier in Sevilla, das durch Ignacio Buse gewonnen wurde. Eine Woche vorher warst du in Oviedo zu Gast und da hast du beim letzten Mal schon angeteased, das ist eines der älteren Turniere, die es auf der Tour gibt.
Mhm. Ja, und vor allem kompletter Kontrast, denn ich habe also begonnen quasi im Norden Spaniens in Asturien, das in Oviedo die Hauptstadt Asturiens ist, bei ja, sehr angenehmen 20 Grad. In Sevilla hatten wir dann später 40 Grad in Andalusien, also da wirklich einmal quer durchs Land geschossen und dann auch wirklich die klimatischen Unterschiede, die Spanien dazu bieten hat, wirklich gespürt. Ja, eines der älteren Turniere und es gibt so einen kleinen Wettbewerb, weiß ich nicht, oder man ist sich nicht so wirklich einig in Spanien, verständlicherweise, ob es tatsächlich das älteste Turnier überhaupt ist. Auf jeden Fall war es die 90. Ausgabe dieser Copa Real Tenis de Oviedo, so wie das Turnier offiziell dann eben auch heißt heute. Nicht immer in diesem gleichen Club ausgetragen, sondern schon vorher auch in einem anderen Verein dann schon stattgefunden hat und die Competition geht quasi mit der Trofeo Conde de Godó, also das heißt dem ATP-Turnier in Barcelona, die auch für sich quasi ja, veranschlagen, das älteste Turnier zu sein. Und soweit ich das gehört habe, dort mit den Leuten in Oviedo ist das also so ein kleines Scharmützel zwischen diesen beiden Turnieren und welches dann tatsächlich nun das älteste ist. Auf jeden Fall 90. Ausgabe, Respekt, auch sehr interessant als Turnier, ein ITF-Turnier, natürlich alles wesentlich kleiner, M25er-Event, aber es war trotzdem auch gute Stimmung, richtig nette Leute dort vor Ort. Man hat sehr viel auf Tradition gesetzt. Mir ist vor allem noch im Kopf, dass die Dudelsackspieler, die diese keltische Kultur in Asturien dann ja auch verkörpern, musikalisch verkörpern, dann zum Beispiel auch beim Finale eingesetzt wurden, dann dort die Hymne gespielt haben, bevor die Spieler dann auf den Platz kamen. Also für so ein ITF-Event war das schon richtig nett aufgezogen und da wird sehr viel auf Tradition auch gelegt und war ein sehr angenehmes Turnier, war sehr angenehme Atmosphäre.
Und auch da hast du einen Veteranen interviewt, nämlich Lorenzo Giustino, der ist nämlich auch schon 34 Jahre alt. Der hat es nie so weit geschafft wie Pablo Carreño bzw. Dusan Lajovic, er war, die höchste Platzierung war 127, aber es ist trotzdem interessant, ihn mal zu hören. Lorenzo Giustino im Interview mit Florian hier.
Okay, so Lorenzo, first of all, thanks for your time and congratulations for this win. A good start into the tournament, right?
Yes, good start. I mean, I didn't know what to expect today. I was my body today, and I was pretty okay. I mean, I was a little bit tired, maybe mentally as well. But yeah, it was good. Good game. First set I played very well, very high level. Second set I dropped a little bit. The other guy maybe see it and then take the chance improving his level. So yeah, well, yeah, I hope to play better next. Tomorrow.
You've played a couple of tournaments here in northern Spain. How would you describe the tournaments here?
Pretty nice. Yeah, the clubs are amazing. I mean, I think they are all very old clubs, maybe more than 100 years old, and they have big traditions with these tournaments going on since like a long time. And I mean, in Gijón, the tournament was perfect. Everybody was so nice. It was like a challenger, maybe. Santander club was really nice as well. They messed it up a lot with the time and as well because they have rain. But then they managed the schedule very poorly. And well, but the club was amazing. I mean, and here the club is as well unbelievable. Like it's so nice.
It's your first time here?
Yeah, maybe I came when I was 16 because I remember this club.
Yeah. Okay. I think you have been based in Spain for many, many, many years. Do you still actually feel Italian or Spanish? How is it actually?
I mean, I'm both. I'm born in Italy as well, of course, and all my family is Italian. And my wife, she's Spanish. Mm-hmm. She's from Barcelona. I have a daughter also now that she's Spanish because she's born in Spain. So, yeah.
How old is she? Sorry?
Nothing. 7 months old.
Oh, okay.
They're with me here. And I'm very happy, actually. This is the first three tournaments I'm going with them because it's tough to travel with a kid, of course. With a newborn, it's not easy. But it's different. I mean, the energy and the feeling.
Yeah,
it's different. I think I'm happier, so maybe I play better, you know. And then, I lived here 25 years, so maybe 26, I don't know. Mm. I'm what, 33?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe 26 years. I made all school and everything. So, yeah, I'm half Italian, half Spanish. I mean, it's what it is.
And you're still based in Barcelona, is it correct?
I'm still living there, yeah.
Yeah. You're one of the veterans on the tour. You played so many tournaments on the Challenger Tour. What would you say? Do you have any tournaments you really like the most or special memories about tournaments?
But in which level?
At Challengers.
Challenger Tour? I mean, there was a lot of amazing tournaments I played, very well organized, and a lot of very bad ones. I have to say, no, it's not always better, you know, like, no, Challenger always better. Not true. Sometimes you play, I mean, look, all these three futures I'm playing here, like, I swear it's like 80%, it's way better than 80% of Challenger we play now on tour. Uh-huh. There are some Challengers that they are managed very poorly, very, very poorly. In places that are very far, nobody's coming, there is like no spectators, no tradition of tennis in the clubs, you know, so they don't know how to treat you, and they just organize a tournament and that's it. And well, here you go in like very nice clubs, like with tradition of tennis. Last week the crowd was amazing. I mean, very, also in Gijón was amazing, a crowd full of people every day. You always play in the center court, the people enjoy watching you, so they treat you, I mean, it's different tradition of tennis, and sometimes you go, I don't know, in some places to play some challenger, it's not even the only guy who is watching your matches is the umpire, the chair umpire, man. Not even him, maybe sleeping as well, I don't know. If they have line calling. No, it's true. Okay. I mean, it's true. There's some tournaments that are very bad, and maybe you are playing guys, one guy 110, another guy 8 in the world. It's crazy. Yeah.
Do you want to tell an example?
I don't know. But example, and I remember some, I don't know, some tournaments in Romania or somewhere, I don't know where, like last year in Bulgaria was a disaster. I mean, it's where it's like completely, like you go there and maybe the course are very, very poor condition. Here, of course, are amazing. I mean, it's a real club, not real, like a royal club. Yeah. You know what I mean? Yeah, yeah. So the club, the courts are like, you're feeling like playing in, I don't know, ATP 500 courts, you know? Yeah. And sometimes you go in a challenger, I cannot bounce one good properly. So, I mean, you know.
But you have been on the tour for many years. Would you say that there is a difference between when you've started 15 years ago to now? Would you say the level has improved?
I mean, everything was different before. I feel like there was way less tournaments, okay? And then way less disponibility to play tennis because it was not a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And then not a lot of players were playing, so maybe I think the guy who was top 200, top 250 was good player. But like under that was easier to play a little bit, you know, because not a lot of people was playing tennis real, because there's not a lot of money in the tour. Before, if you were not top 80, you were not making money, okay? Now, if you are top 200, you can do something in your life, you know? So more money, more possibility, you can practice more, you can have more coaches. I can say also that it's easier to play now because they change the balls. The balls are easier to control. Mm-hmm. The rackets are easier to play. So I think it's easier to play tennis right now. It's easier to put the ball inside. I don't know how to explain it, but the balls are way easier to control. They are very slow, and this is like making easier to play tennis.
It's interesting because a couple of players, they were complaining about the balls in recent times. They say that it would actually hurt them in kind of way.
Yeah, I mean, last 2 days ago, some guy asked me, man, what's your favorite ball? No one. They are all shit. There is poor and poorly, like very bad. There is bad balls and very bad balls. Okay. I mean, it's like I feel like there's no good balls anymore. Okay. Because I'm coming from a different era when I started tennis, and the balls were like different, like faster, jumpier. The tennis was faster, shorter. It was tougher to control the ball. Now the tennis is slower. Everything, the pace of somebody saying that the tennis now is playing faster, but it's completely untrue. I feel like it's slower because you can see that the counts of the rallies are more. Mm-hmm. Yes. So how can be faster if they are rallying more? It's slower. And actually, I don't know, the average speed winners before, like 8 years ago, was 160 kilometers per hour. Now it's 122. Mm-hmm. And you can see in the stats of the ATP. Yes. So cannot be faster tennis. Yeah. It's actually way slower.
And it's also because of the surface.
It's because of the ball, mainly.
Okay.
Mainly it's the ball. The ball, they change it, the rubber or whatever, they make it slower, so like this the crowd can enjoy more. Not a lot of aces, not a lot of first serve winners. So it's like this right now, and it's okay like this. You have to, I don't know, to adapt it, you know. If they change the conditions, then the best one of that condition can play better. You can see that the average height in the top 100, it's increased from 10 centimeters high, like 190, 187, because bigger you are, longer you are, stronger you hit, and it's better for slow balls.
Do you also feel a bit more competition compared to maybe 15 years ago?
Yeah, I told you there's more tournaments, so people is playing every week, basically. There's a lot of money, so more money, more people is playing tennis, more people is professional.
Yeah.
Before you were going and nobody was at the gym, nobody was with the physical condition, and now everybody's with trainer, with physio, with coaches, everybody's professional, everybody's doing correct things. So of course, level of tennis right now is the class, the famous 2%. I don't know if you heard it, but it's like to win a match you need 2% points more of the other guy. That's it. And this is completely true.
Yeah.
You have to win a tournament, you just need to be 2% better than everybody.
Okay.
But you had one highlight during the Challenger Tour, I think, was your title. You won in Almaty. What are your memories of this tournament?
Yeah, it was very nice tournament there, over there, very nice courts. Altitude was very tough challenger, actually. Mm. A lot of top 100s inside. I think that was my best year. I was almost going top 100 that year. I was, I think, top 10 in challenger ranking or more. Like, I was winning so many matches. I made the same years. I made 3 finals, 1 victory, like 4 semis. Was like very, very, very high level for me. And well, yeah, I was. It's happy and not happy because that year it's where I had the very bad injury of elbow, and then my career like break completely. You know, from going top 100 to maybe not play tennis anymore, you know. So was a little bit of very big joys, that memories, and sadness, you know. Stuff.
What are your goals right now?
I mean, I don't know. I want to play Grand Slams again. So yeah, I mean, I feel I'm still playing very good tennis. Sometimes I play very high level again, and well, this year for me was not easy. Also last year, I completely break a little bit because, of course, my wife was pregnant and I was expecting a child. And it's not only tennis, you know. After 12 years on the tour, I mean, I was 10 years traveling top 200. It's not easy. So in one moment, I say, okay, come on, I don't want to travel anymore. I'm tired. I want to be at home with my kid and my wife. And then now I'm motivated. They are here and trying to win those tournaments to get 200 again, you know, maybe top 200, and maybe enjoying a few years more if I can.
But have you already had some plans for your career after the tennis?
No, not really. I have no plans. Like, maybe yes, maybe not. I don't know. Something I will do.
Okay, so still on the court. Wish you all the best, and all the best with your family as well. Yeah.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Lorenzo.
Thanks.
It was a pleasure.
Ja, er hat es nie in die Top 100 geschafft. 34 Jahre, einer dieser Journeymen, von denen man so gerne spricht.
Für mich ist er der Inbegriff des Challenger-Spielers. Mhm. Also, wie gesagt, ich glaube, ich bin seit 2009 oder sowas auf der Tour, und so lange ist Lorenzo Giustino auch mit dabei, und ich habe ihn immer nur bei Challenger-Events gesehen und seit vielen, vielen Jahren. Und er ist ja wirklich ein ganz netter Kerl, der schon lange, lange in Spanien dann eben auch lebt. Und wie im Interview hat man dann ja auch gehört, war so ein bisschen die Intention, ja, herauszufinden, wie sich das Ganze verändert hat. Ne? Also was sind die Unterschiede zu dem Zeitpunkt auf Challenger-Turnieren, als er begonnen hat, zu dem, was heute ist, wie ist die Entwicklung? Und um es kurz zusammenzufassen, es ist einfach alles sehr intensiver, und der Wettkampf, die Intensität des Wettkampfes ist einfach, hat ganz stark zugenommen, und das verspürt man, und das verspürt eben auch ein Lorenzo Giustino.
Lorenzo Giustino, die Nummer 127 der Welt war er mal. Das ist lange her, dass er die Nummer 127 war. Jetzt momentan ist er unter den Top 300, 273. Und vielleicht schafft er es ja nochmal wieder zurück Richtung eines Grand Slam Qualifiers. Das wäre ihm auf jeden Fall zu wünschen. Ein anderer Spieler, der kein Veteran ist, der erst 25 Jahre alt ist, aber den hast du auch im Interview, Carlos López Montagut. Der hat hier in Oviedo die dritte Runde erreicht, das Viertelfinale, hat dann auch noch in Sevilla das Achtelfinale erreicht, hat dort drei Matches gewonnen und hat der erst gegen David Roda Sanchez verloren, also hatte gute Wochen jetzt in den letzten Wochen in Spanien und auch den hattest du im Interview. Der hat hier das Viertelfinale in Oviedo erreicht, hat dann gegen Javier Barranco Cosano verloren. Carlos López Montagut im Interview.
Yeah, so Carlos, first of all, thanks for your time. To be honest, I haven't seen much of your match, but I saw the scores and I think it seemed to be straight. How was it in court today?
Yeah, it was like a really solid match from my side. It was like an opponent I know very, very well. We know each other. We practiced together before and now in the same academy. So I know him very well. So it was like a match not easy with this kind of tension always you have when you play one you know very good. But I played really solid. Maybe he was a bit more nervous than me, but I did my job. And really happy for the win.
I think you know the tournament here pretty well. I think you won here 2 years ago, right? What can you tell us about this event? Because I think it's also pretty traditional in Spain,
yeah,
isn't
yeah.
it?
It's really, 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 really long time they are doing this tournament. I think I heard in the wheelchair, like they were saying maybe 90 years,
yeah,
90
tradition, yeah.
And it's really special, this tournament. Always you won one tournament, always come back and see how people treat you and everything. It's really nice. Also, if you didn't win, yeah. Also they treat you really well. So it's very, very special for me and I feel like at home here.
Yeah. How was the experience 2 years ago when you won the tournament?
Yeah, it was so good because I was coming like, I was playing 2 months, and before these 2 months, I was injured for 6 months.
Oh, okay.
So it was the first tournament I won after the injury. So I was coming not with too much confidence, you know, some doubts. Mm-hmm. After 6 months, stopped with and play any tournaments. So I arrived here, and I step by step. At the end, it was really good. Some days they expect to rain, mm-hmm. and after we could finish the tournament on Saturday, uh-huh. and after I go straight to the qualies of Challenger Sevilla,
oh, mm-hmm.
and it was really nice week.
Okay. You already mentioned it, the academy. Can you tell us a bit about you? Where are you based? Where yeah. do you practice?
Yeah, I live in Valencia, in Algemesí, a small town like 20 minutes by car from Valencia, and I was practicing. The last 2 years with a private coach, mm-hmm. and 2-3 months ago I changed to one academy, G Tennis. It's mm-hmm. a lot of players there, and it's really nice to grow up and young people and all the coaches are so good. So I'm really happy there.
The same of Carlos Tabanet?
Yeah, same.
When you have to describe your own game style on court, how would you describe it?
Yeah, it's not easy question, eh? Because, but I will describe it as really solid, really hard, hard to beat me. I think and I hope, and also I like to dominate with my forehand, mm-hmm. and I like to do the matches so also really physically because it's I think one point for me, and that's it. I think this is one of the two that I'd like to say.
Clay is your favorite surface?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah, because in the past there have come many Spaniards who also said, "Oh, I like to play on hard." For example.
Yeah. There's a lot of people that they like to play on hard court as well. Last year, I played some tournaments on hard court. Mm. Actually, I like hard court, but I like more clay court. You know, I think for my game, it's better to play on clay court. But anyway. We have to improve to play in hardcore, but at the end, like 2 of 4 Grand Slam, they are on hardcore. So,
yeah.
And I think nowadays it's not like 50 years ago that it was people only play clay court and people only play grass and hardcore. And now I think everyone can play in every surface.
You were a top junior. How would you say what were the hardest challenges to get on the pro circuit?
Yeah, when you exit in junior, like you finish your junior period playing like grand slams in the biggest stages, like they treat you like a really professional players, and after and go to the pros and go to the futures and start with the futures is not easy. If you like believe that you are already there, no, you have to come back and start from zero, because and also in pro there's no there's also more old people that like they fight you every point. Maybe in junior it cannot happen, you know, but I think it's the one of the most difficult challenge to start in the pro circuit like this. You come from the big stages and playing juniors, and maybe if you are a bit hard, maybe the other one throw you the match, but it, this one normally in pro tour it doesn't happen.
Spain is a big nation in terms of tennis. Did you feel any kind of pressure when you were a top junior that you maybe also get some comparisons to the top ranked Spanish players like Nadal? And so, you know, when you're coming up, then there is some pressures on the young Spaniards. Did you feel anything like this?
No, I didn't feel it like from the people. Mm-hmm. I think it was a bit more from myself, you know.
Okay.
Because from the people, you know, I was like 11, but I wasn't like so mediatic, and that I haven't like big sponsors and nothing. I was like a small profile, you know, and I was doing my job, and I was practicing with my coach my whole life since I was 4 years old until 20. Mm-hmm. And I did this with this coach, and we were like really like small in the small team, you know. And maybe I feel the pressure, but for myself, because you know I was looking for maybe if I'm top junior, maybe I can be a professional tennis player. So in the first years it was not easy. Also I had one injury in my shoulder, and in my shoulder I stopped 6 months, and after when I come back the COVID, the coronavirus, yeah, okay, come. So it was an easy, yeah, period because of all these stuffs, but I didn't feel like this pressure from the people outside of the court, honestly.
What were the highlights of your junior career?
My highlights, it was like, I think the best result is quarterfinals in Roland Garros, mm-hmm, and I won also the great one in Vienna. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of big yeah, players now top tens. They won this tournament.
In Ferrero's Academy, right?
In Ferrero's, yeah. Yeah. And before this, it was playing, they were playing a great two. I also won it, mm, and I think I also did quarterfinals in doubles in Roland Garros, and I think it's one of my biggest stages. Yeah.
Did you get any support from the Spanish Federation, or how did you manage to do it financially? Because it's also tough to do it financially, yeah,
it's,
right?
It's really tough. No, actually, I didn't receive anything. Mm-hmm. Like when I turned, I think 19, they told me it was. I was playing also already like tournaments with prize money, and they don't give me any more. Mm-hmm. And it was the time I needed, but it's fine. And financially, it's not easy. We have to manage it really well and see like the calendar really well, where sites are a bit more cheap, a bit more like available for us. Also, because now we are playing in the academy and traveling with one coach, many players, so this is also better for us, because we, the expenses of the coach, we can like pay in with like everyone. And one of my, honestly, one of my biggest support financially is the team matches. Mm-hmm. I play team matches in Germany, in Italy, in Spain, probably this year in France. Mm-hmm. And and thanks to these teams and to these matches, it's not easy, because like every weekend you have to go to play. If you are not in the tournament, you have to go to play, but we need it. At least I need it, because my family and me, and we don't have too much money to don't do this, you know. Okay. So we need to do it, and that's it. It's fine.
Where did you play in Germany?
I play in Leipzig.
Leipzig.
Leipzig. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay. Yeah, yeah. Last year I played in Mannheim, mm-hmm, but and this year in Leipzig.
Okay. Mannheim was Grün-Weiß Mannheim?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Tennis Bundesliga.
Yeah, Tennis Bundesliga. Okay. I played 2 years on this team.
How was the experience?
Yeah, really good, really good. I entered here. It's not easy to enter, but I entered because I'm a friend of Pedro Martinez and Bernabe Zapata, and they played there. And they put me in on the team, and it was really nice. And also with Gerald,
it was like really nice, yeah. Really nice experience. Yeah.
I think if I'm right, it was last year when Dominic Thiem also played, right?
I think yes. Yeah. I wasn't there, but yeah. I think yes, because yeah, Gera, the captain, yeah. is really, really close friend from
yeah.
Thiem.
Yeah, exactly. You already mentioned your family. How did you get into tennis in general?
Yeah, yes, sir, because my mom was receiving like tennis lessons, and uh-huh. I was going to the club, and we are three brothers, mm-hmm. and while she was like receiving the classes, they put us like to the tennis lessons where we were, I think I was four, uh-huh. and I started, and after that the coaches said, this guy is not uh-huh. is not good doing bad yeah. bad things, you know, and I started, and at 9 years old I start to practice like every day. In the afternoon, when I finished the school, I was going to the club, and until today.
Okay. When you're off the court, what are your hobbies? What are your interests?
I like to go out with my friends, with my family, like one Sunday and eating paella. I love paella. I'm from Valencia. And yeah. It's really, really traditional. The Sundays eat good paella with family, friends, and with my girlfriend also go travel. I like to travel, but not with tennis, just yeah. for hobby, you know, because it's really, really different. And yeah, that's it. I also like to see other sports, Formula One, football. So tennis, I think, is the sport I don't watch never, because I always have the tennis in my head. Yeah. Yeah, so I want to forget it for a while.
When you travel, do you have a favorite spot? What is your favorite city or country? I don't know.
Like when I travel, what?
Yeah. Alone or
off,
of
tennis.
Off the tour, yeah.
Yeah. I don't know, because I didn't travel too much for hobby. Yeah. You know, the last two holidays, I went to Lisbon and to mm-hmm. Tenerife in Canary mm-hmm. Island, and I liked really much mm-hmm. both. They were so different, like mm-hmm. kind of travels, but I like so much. And also I like to travel here inside of Spain, mm-hmm. because I think we have like many different kind of here in the north. It's really different to in the south, and also in this city, and it's places they have like his own like traditional food, the weather it mm-hmm. changed. So I like really much to travel inside of Spain also.
What do you like of Oviedo?
I didn't see too much, but I like really much one square. It's in the city center, and with some terraces, you know, here in Spain it's really mm-hmm. difficult to the terrace and yeah. one beer. when I'm off yeah. the tournament, if I'm in the tournament, I don't drink beer, and it's really nice. Yeah.
And on the tour, do you have a favorite tournament, a place you really liked so far?
Yeah, probably this one is one of the best, also because I won here. Yeah. So this make it also special. But I like also really much Gandia and Denia. There's mm-hmm. really close to my home.
Yeah,
I won it like 1 month ago, mm-hmm. because there my family, my friends can come and see the matches, and I feel the support like really, really, really close. So it's really nice to play there also.
Football, La Liga has started. You said you're yeah. interested in football. Yeah, so we have a lot of Valencian clubs in the first division. Which one is yours?
No, actually I support Barcelona. But okay. I always support also Valencia.
Okay.
You know, but yeah. that depends if they play Valencia mm-hmm. against Barcelona. I don't know who okay. I will support. Depends of the season, how it's going, and who needs more the 3 points.
Okay, I understand. Yeah, I think next weekend they will play each other. Okay. When you have a look back at the first half of the season, you already mentioned it. You won a tournament a few weeks ago. How would you rate your season so far?
Yeah, my season it starts not easy because I also changed the racket. I play one mm-hmm. my whole life with Babolat, and I changed in the beginning of the year because Babolat say me they are not giving me any more contract. Mm-hmm. So I say okay, at least I'm gonna prove some racket. And Jonas helps me a bit with the material and I change it. Mm-hmm. But actually, I was playing like 2 months and I was feeling like. I wasn't like really comfortable because I played my hula with Babolat, and it's really, really good racket, honestly. Mm-hmm. It's really racket, I feel it. But for my game, I need some months to adapt to the racket. But this month, I'm already 25. I didn't have it. So I know the Babolat was going good for me, and I changed back. And also I changed to this academy. I leave my private coach, and I start to in this academy. So it was a season in the beginning of the season, a bit of changes, a bit of period of adaptation, you know, but now I'm comfortable and I'm working like hard to come back in my best ranking, and that's it.
That's the goal.
Yeah.
Is it?
Yeah, that's the goal. Yeah, of course. Even a bit more. Yeah.
Yeah. Do you set yourself any goals in terms of ranking positions? Maybe.
Yeah. Honestly, I don't like to say when I finish the year I want to be this, you know. But of course, all the people, I think all the players we are playing in the future, we are doing some good results. Our goal is to enter in the qualies of the Grand Slams. This also because of the money. There's a big support financially, you know. After you enter, so I think it's the goal of 90% people there playing these tournaments.
Gab es eine Geschichte dahinter, dass du ihn unbedingt interviewen wolltest?
Ja, es gab schon einen Hintergrund, weil er auch einer dieser jungen Spanier eben war, jetzt 25, das heißt rückblickend ist auch gut 7 Jahre her wahrscheinlich, die so als diese großen Talente eben gehypt wurden. Und es gibt ja da so ein paar Beispiele, wo in Spanien, wenn man als junger Spieler nach oben kommt oder ein erfolgreicher Junior ist, so wie es bei ihm eben auch war, ich glaube, er war Top-10-Spieler als Junior, dann ist natürlich sofort der Vergleich mit einem Rafael Nadal da, mit den anderen großen Spaniern. Und da hat mich natürlich schon so ein bisschen interessiert, wie er damit umgegangen ist oder wie er damit umgeht heute vielleicht auch noch, wo er ja dann vielleicht am Ende bis heute zumindest nicht so ganz gezündet hat. Ne? Und das war eigentlich so ein bisschen die Idee, da mit ihm drüber zu spielen. Du hast es gesagt, er war dann in Sevilla dann noch mit dabei, hat da zum zweiten Mal dort dann eben auch die zweite Runde erreicht, dass er erfolgreich die Quali auch gespielt hat. Also der nächste Schritt für ihn ist natürlich jetzt, sich auf Challenger-Ebene zu etablieren. Und ja, dann wird man sehen, in welche Richtung das vielleicht noch gehen würde. Dass er in die Top 100 kommt oder so, weiß ich nicht. Das mag wahrscheinlich in den Sternen stehen. Aber dass das auf jeden Fall noch ein paar Plätze nach oben geht, da sehe ich das Potenzial noch da. Und er gehört dann auch zu diesen Spielern, die dann vielleicht mit Ende 20 dann vielleicht noch ihr bestes Tennis abrufen können. Im Moment scheint er so gerade an dieser Stelle zu sein, wo es vielleicht eben noch ein bisschen besser wird. Wichtig auch für ihn, verletzungsfrei zu bleiben, denn auch er hatte in der Vergangenheit eben mit Verletzungen zu kämpfen, die ihn dann auch wieder zurückgeworfen hatten.
Genau, und im Moment ist er außerhalb der Top 500 und da drücken wir die Daumen, dass er möglichst schnell wieder zurückkommt. Es gab sehr, sehr viele kommende Rafael Nadals und Carlos Lopez Montagut war für eine kurze Zeit einer dieser Spieler und auch er war im Interview. Und am Ende wollen wir noch dieses Ganze beschließen, diesen ganzen Podcast mit dem Turnierdirektor von Oviedo, das ist José González de Valle. Den hast du im Interview und der hat so ein bisschen einen Frühstart erlebt, aber das Interview hört ihr hier.
This is a very old tournament. In fact, I mean, it's one of the things that, it has to do with the economic shape of our region anyway. Mm-hmm. Because Asturias was in the 60s and the 70s. Being a coal mine region, and the industrial side of things, it was quite strong. So that led to this family promoting the tournament. So we were a Grand Prix back in the 70s.
Yes.
Bjorn Borg played here.
Okay.
Stan Smith played here.
Oh, very cool.
So we had this lineup at the time. Now with the economy going the way it went after we joined the European Union, it is what it is. Now we're back at the ITF level, but we're still held in great regard to have the tournament. So we're 25,000 ITF, and we try to do the best we can with the tournament. Because this tournament started in the 30s, 1930. Mm-hmm. So it's quite an old tournament. It's a debate if it's the oldest in Spain, in between us and Barcelona.
In Barcelona, okay.
Yeah, the Godó. So they claim they are, we claim we are. I don't know. But it's close. It's close. Okay. Yeah, because I think the first edition, it was 1930 something. So.
Yeah.
So yeah, it's an old tournament, and we take great pride on it, and we try to do our best. Yeah.
Very cool. You mentioned the family. So it was founded by a family?
Well, at the beginning, it was just an association of sportsmen here in town.
Mm-hmm.
Then I believe in the 50s, the Masabeo mm-hmm. family helped the tournament and made a big push.
Mm-hmm.
So that's when the tournament became part of the Colgate Grand Prix.
Mm-hmm.
So that's looking at 1975, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
That's when it became very big, and it was televised, national TV.
Mm-hmm.
We play at the arena, and it was a big venue. You know, all these players came, and it was a very important. I believe that year in Spain, it was the most important tournament in the country.
Okay.
So,
but yeah. It wasn't held at this club.
It had to be outside the club. Yeah. It was so big.
Yeah, exactly.
It just grew too big for that particular edition.
Mm-hmm.
We had to take him outside the club because we didn't have enough. We had the year before that, we had the Roland Garros final here mm-hmm. because I think this was 1974. 1973, if I'm not mistaken, the Roland Garros final was Jan Kodes against Franco Franulovic.
Okay.
And Kodes won in 5 sets. And they came here next year. They play the final of the tournament.
Uh-huh.
And Franulovic won here in 5.
Okay.
So it was the other way around, the French Open final.
It was a revenge.
Yeah, for him, I guess, right? And I remember that very well because it was the first tennis match that I ever watched. My father took me to watch that match.
Okay.
It was in this court. Okay. It was over there. The bleachers were right there, and we were watching the. And I didn't play at the time. I didn't understand it very well, but it was the Roland Garros final. Yeah.
And I think the club is celebrating its 75th
anniversary. Yes, this year. Yeah. Founded in 1950, but the tournament is older than the club.
Yeah. And you're from Oviedo?
Yeah, I was born here.
Okay. So what makes Oviedo so special?
Well, I guess that is very old.
Yeah.
Oviedo was founded in the 9th century.
Yeah.
So it's quite an old city. Also, it's the capital of Asturias, and Asturias being, the reconquest, as we call it, of the Christian troops going all the way down south, that was 1718 exactly. That's when the battle took place. That's what we believe is special. Yeah.
What would you recommend? What do you have to do as a tourist in Oviedo? What is a must see? Or a must to do? I don't know.
Well, I guess you have to just tour the city around. It's an old city, so it's pedestrian friendly.
Mm.
You just walk around, see the university, see the old part of town, enjoy the sidra. Of course, you have to drink sidra if you're here. The food is quite nice. And if you're into art, we have a pre-Romanesque art that we have up in the mountain. Which is quite odd because it's very old. You're looking at a building that is, ancient building. That's quite unique. And enjoy the town. Enjoy the city. The people are very friendly. I think you can get a taste of that. I will do that.
Yeah. And if you watch tennis nowadays, what are your favorite players or what do you like the most of the modern tennis of today?
As easy, anybody that plays with a one-hander backhand.
Okay.
that's why that Garcia player is playing on the number one court.
Okay,
because we like to see the old-fashioned, mm-hmm. neat style. Yes. So the supervisor, the ITF supervisor Ivan, he's very knowledgeable and he always plays the one-hander on central court.
Oh, really?
Yeah, of course. We know the players. We know who plays, and we enjoy that. There are a lot of tennis connoisseurs around here. So anybody that plays the 100 gets the best spot.
pretty cool. Never heard this before. Finally, who will win the tournament? What is your idea?
Well, it's going to be the number one, number two seeds normally. You know how that is. But I think Javier Barranco that won here.
Yeah.
So we have two guys that won the tournament in the past 5 years. We have Barranco won. Mm-hmm. He's a very strong player, Javier Barranco. And López Montagut, Carlos mm-hmm. López Montagut also won here. So so them two, and also Justino, who's the number one seeded player. That will be my bet, those three.
Bist nicht mal zu deiner ersten Frage gekommen.
Ja,
es er war so aufgeregt, mit dir zu sprechen.
Ja, auch da vielleicht zum Hintergrund, es war ganz interessant, weil ich hatte natürlich viel Leute dort vor Ort, mit denen ich auf Spanisch sprechen konnte, aber ich wollte jemanden eben auch holen, der mit mir auf Englisch spricht. Mhm. Und um das hier in den Podcast auch mit reinzunehmen. Und dann hatte man gesagt, ja, hier, der junge Mann hier wäre also ideal dafür. Und er spricht ja perfektes Englisch, wie man auch hört. Das Ding ist nur, also er ist der ehemalige Turnierdirektor, er ist nicht mehr der aktuelle. Er war jahrelang Turnierdirektor. Und deshalb war das ganz nett, mit ihm zu plaudern. Und wir haben eben so ein bisschen angefangen zu reden, und ich glaube, er hat das gar nicht dann so richtig mitbekommen, als ich dann irgendwie anfangen wollte, und hat mich auch rumgeführt durch diesen Club. Also es war sehr, sehr nett, weil natürlich er dann auch ein bisschen stolz präsentiert hat, wer da schon alles gespielt hat, wer da alles gewonnen hat. Also da waren ja auch wirklich alle Größen in diesem Club und bei diesem Turnier ja schon mit am Start, und das war wirklich eine sehr nette Führung und dann auch ein sehr nettes auf Englisch geführtes Interview. Vielen Dank dafür.
Also, das war das Interview mit dem ehemaligen Turnierdirektor von Oviedo, José González del Valle. Das war's mit der heutigen Ausgabe schon wieder. Was sind für dich die nächsten Pläne?
Ja, jetzt ist erstmal tatsächlich ein bisschen ruhiger, oder? Wir haben Davis Cup noch vor der Tür, aber es gibt ja noch so ein paar Ausklänge. Tatsächlich hier sandplatztechnisch in Europa. Bad Waltersdorf wäre vielleicht noch eine Option.
Ja.
Aber das ist alles noch ein bisschen in den Sternen, muss ich ehrlich gesagt sagen. Denn es war jetzt viel Tennis in letzter Zeit, und da ist man auch mal froh, wenn man ein paar Tage oder vielleicht ein paar Wochen dann auch ein bisschen weniger Tennis hat. Aber wir kommen ganz sicher wieder mit einer Challenger Corner und werden da auf jeden Fall weiter am Ball bleiben.
Das war es, wie gesagt, mit der neuen Ausgabe. Wenn euch das gefällt, freuen wir uns über Bewertungen, Rezensionen auf iTunes und auf Spotify. Folgt Tennis Tour Talk auf Instagram, auf Blue Sky und auch auf Twitter. Ihr solltet tennistourtalk.com auf jeden Fall in eurem Bookmarks haben, und Chip in Charge könnt ihr folgen auf Instagram und Blue Sky. Vielen Dank fürs Zuhören. Bis zum nächsten Mal. Auf Wiederhören.
Chip in Charge.
Der Tennis-Podcast mit Andreas Thies
und Philipp Joubert. Auf meinsportpodcast.de.
Hallo, hier ist Gregor vom Plauschangriff mit einem hörenswerten Hinweis für euch. Ghost of Yotei erscheint am 2. Oktober 2025 exklusiv für PS5. Im Action-Adventure begleitet ihr Atsu auf eine spektakuläre emotionale Reise durch eine neue, offene Welt am nördlichen Rand Japans im 17. Jahrhundert, rund um den majestätischen Berg Yotei in Ezo, dem heutigen Hokkaido. Fans von Ghost of Tsushima kommen voll auf ihre Kosten bzw. bekommen sogar noch mehr. Ihr könnt die Open World komplett nach eurem Vorlieben erkunden. Von verschneiten Berghängen über Grasland bis hin zu Feldern voller Wildblumen. Und das Beste, auch das Kampfsystem wurde noch einmal weiterentwickelt. Ihr kämpft flüssig, könnt Waffen wie Doppelkatana, Sodachi, Kusarigama, Yari oder Schusswaffen im Kampf wechseln und trainiert mit verschiedenen Sensei, um sie zu meistern. Um das Spiel in Gänze genießen zu können, braucht ihr aber keinerlei Vorwissen. Ghost of Yotei ist keine Fortsetzung von Ghost of Tsushima, sondern ein eigenständiges Abenteuer mit eigener Geschichte, Charakteren und einer völlig neuen Welt. Von Grund auf für die PS5 entwickelt, nutzt das Spiel alle Features. Haptisches Feedback, adaptive Trigger, 3D-Audio, ultraschnelles Laden dank SSD und atemberaubende Grafik. Optimiert sogar noch für die PS5 Pro. Also, Ghost of Yotei ab dem 2. Oktober 2025 exklusiv für PS5. Alle Infos in den Shownotes.